Hola, hola, y bienvenidos a Tu Salud, the definitive podcast for Latine and Indigenous health policy, where we talk about all things Latine, policy, and our health. I am Dr. Ceci Aquino, Executive Director at the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California. And today, I am joined by the wonderful Odilia Romero, Executive Director at Comunidades Indígenas en Liderazgo, Cielo. Today, we'll be talking about the fight for Indigenous rights and the policy changes needed to get us to equity, the joy of our people, even in the face of difficulties, and landing a Vogue photo shoot over tamales. So with that, let's get started. Bueno, pues bienvenida y muy buenos días. Bienvenida a tu salud. And just wanted to welcome you and thank you for the time. I'm so excited for our conversation today.
Hi, thank you for having me. Buenos días.
Buenos días. So just to get us started, let's get a little bit into the personal. What is your story? Where do you come from? What makes you you?
My name is Odilia Romero, and I am from San Bartolomé, Sogocho, up in the highlands of Oaxaca, in the northern highlands of Oaxaca. I'm a Zapotec woman, and it's just me.
I love it. In the conversations that we've been having, many of our guests have shared maybe a defining moment or memory in their childhood that, looking back, connects you to your work around advocacy and fighting for human rights, really. Is there anything that you can think back, any memory that reminds you of that moment and that maybe roots you and your work today?
Well, I wouldn't say that there is a moment, because when I came here, I only spoke Zapotec, very few words in Spanish. Uh-huh. And I, at that time, I didn't think it was a human right violation, right? It's now, after you've learned and you know the history of colonization, is that you realize that.
Yeah.
You know, your rights were being violated as a child,
right,
for not speaking the colonial languages and speaking your own and being singled out. But I think a lot of my work has to do with my own personal experience, my family, my community, about being monolingual in a country that had a colonial language that is English, right? Yeah. And not being recognized as Indigenous people, but labeled as Latinos.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about that. I have seen your amazing work from Vogue to your TED Talk. Just amazing work around building the narrative and really differentiating this health equity movement for Latinos versus Indigenous communities, and how the Latinidad movement, unfortunately, has really invisibilized the work that you all are doing. And, you know, we want to be partners in the work and accept that and have those transparent conversations. So would you be able to share a little bit more about that amazing advocacy that you do to highlight Indigenous rights?
Well, I think we have to start, like, the Latino movement is important. You know, it's an important movement. And it is important for your rights to be recognized as the Latino Hispanic population. But it's also important that our rights is recognized as Indigenous people, that we are visible, that our struggles are also should be visible, just like yours, you know, because we want to start with that. It's a call in. Like, how do you become an ally of an Indigenous movement? Mm-hmm. Instead of appropriating the food, the culture, the clothing, and ignore our struggle, our language, you know, the challenges that we face with language violence, the lack of data about our existence, the lack of information about the differences that we have, and that we don't all speak Spanish. You know, there's four colonial languages speaking here in the continent, which is English, Spanish, Portuguese, and I forget the other one. But there are thousands and hundreds of Indigenous languages spoken here in the continent. You know, if we talk about Mexico, we have 364 languages from 68 nations, right? So all that is important too. That's all being erased, but when there's an assumption that we are all Latinos and that we all speak Spanish and everybody could talk to us slower, faster, you know, have us repeat what they're telling us in Spanish or English, without taking into account that it's a whole different language. You wouldn't want to go to court in Germany with a few words of German, right?
Right. 100%. And I love what you do, Odilia, during conferences and in amazing panels that I've seen you in, where you start in an indigenous language and you leave it there. I think that's so powerful, right? To help people understand and to place themselves in the shoes of someone who doesn't speak that language and how difficult it is to navigate a world that doesn't speak your language, and being able to put that in front of people's face and say, this is it, face it, right?
Yes, I mean, that exercise, I do it because we do these panels, we do these conversations, and it still doesn't get to people. Like, by speaking to me louder doesn't mean I'm gonna understand. Mm-hmm. Or by repeating it doesn't mean I'm by you telling me to repeat it and I repeat, doesn't mean I understand. Or the fact that I pray that Ave Maria 100 times a day doesn't mean that I'm understanding my due process or getting, making an informed decision on my health. So we had to go to that extreme exercise in the hopes that people would understand. And when I ask them, what do you feel? They're like, well, I feel excluded. I don't feel good. Exactly. It doesn't feel good to be excluded. It doesn't feel good not to understand, you know, and that's what we go through as Indigenous people every day, all day long, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. What do you think is left to do? Because a lot of that is narrative change, right? Building that empathy, building that connection with other communities to really understand the work. What is left to do in terms of that narrative work to get people to a place where they feel like they can support the movement?
They have to think of us as humans, you know, because they love Oaxaca. Oaxaca's a trend, right? Mm. It's the world number one place to go for vacation, but you don't think like what Indigenous Oaxacan go through every day. Mm. You know, they love our clothes, they love our mezcal. Wearing a traditional regalia doesn't translate to our rights. Mm-hmm. Drinking a mezcal or investing in a mezcal company doesn't translate to our rights. Mm-hmm. Currently, Oaxaca is in a crisis of water. We don't have water. There's fires all over. You know, the community in Chiapas just got massacred, which is in Chiapas, south of Mexico. But everybody talks about us like, you know, we have amazing things, but they don't talk about the amazing human. Yeah. They don't talk about the rights of that human being.
Yeah,
the right to stay home, the right to their land, the right to their clothing. It's getting to the point, like, if I want to wear a traditional regalia, it's been so gentrified. Yeah. I don't know if that's the word for clothing, but it's been so culturally appropriated that we can no longer afford it. Who could afford a $1,500 outfit? No one.
Right.
So communities produce it to sell because, yes, they need to eat. Yes, they need to feed their children, right? But it's our things have become a commodity for the world, but it doesn't translate to our rights.
Yeah. And I think you bring up such an important point around the violence that we still see against Indigenous communities in Latin American countries and, you know, the violence that we see here in the U.S. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Just as, how do we face this anti-Indigeneity sentiments, even for many of us, home countries in Latin America?
We have to start at home, right? I'm sure at your dinner table, at your luncheon, at your Christmas event, there will be a comment made against Indigenous people, a negative comment, right? I'm not going to repeat them here, but that always happens every household, even mine. So how do you become that uncomfortable person and say, no, that is not okay to say, that is not okay to do? It starts at home. Because at that end, we learn these racist comments, these racist attitudes at home. So you have to undo them from home.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more to do. I mean, you become remembering, like, by wearing the traditional regalia, does not translate to an allyship. What are you doing for policy change in partnership with Indigenous people? What are you doing for land rights with Indigenous people?
Yes.
You know, Ricky, you know, land acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing it? Are the Native Americans there?
Mm-hmm.
You don't acknowledge the land without them being there.
Yeah.
Are they in that room? Are they part of the decision making? Are they included in this process?
Yeah.
Yes, acknowledge the land, which is important, but mm-hmm. are the people there? And I think that's how you become an ally. There's a lot more to do. And yes, it's narrative change, but how do you not appropriate Indigenous cultures and create your own narrative change?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people reconnecting with Indigenous roots, and you take that space of Indigenous people and speak on our behalf, but we could speak for ourselves.
Yeah.
How do you take a step back and say, you know what, let me give the microphone to the Indigenous folks. Let me give them the microphone because they know what it is to be without language access. They know what it is to be discriminated. Yes, it's important for you to reconnect with your Indigenous roots. But while you do that, take a step back and give the microphone to Indigenous people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Center the community so that folks can speak for themselves. And I love that you bring up that structural change, right? That's the way that we see this work being sustainable, not just having the right talking points and saying what you need to say, but actually creating sustainable change through policy, through legislation. And I'm so proud of the amazing work that we've been able to accomplish the past 2 years with data desegregation with our bill SB 1016. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about what that process has been and how we came together in that partnership?
Well, I think that process has been very good, very interesting, because it's when we talk about partnership, right? Let's be partners at an equal level. You know, teach us how policy works. Maybe we don't know how policy works. How are you as a Latinx organization that are already knowledgeable on it, transmit the knowledge to the Indigenous organization that are part. And I think treating us at an equal level is very important. And also taking our opinions into account is another sign of being an ally. You know, instead of telling us what to do, like, well, let's do this, or this is how it works, this is how policy works. Because a lot of us don't know how policy works. So I think this experience with you all has been really great. And you have an amazing team, of course, and you have two Indigenous person in your team. And that's important to have Indigenous people from Indigenous communities to also work in this policy, right, along with Indigenous organization. It's been rough because the governor vetoes us the first time around. And that's his failure to recognize that contribution of Indigenous people throughout California, right? California would not be such a power state without the contribution of Indigenous people. But yet he chooses to invisibilize our existence through data. And then here we go back again. Hopefully this time around, he won't veto us and you'll pass.
100%. Yes, we are fighting for that. We're on the Latino caucus priorities. And I feel like everybody that we speak to, all of our stakeholders, all of our elected leaders and administrative representatives, everyone knows that it's time for this to happen. So I'm excited and I'm hopeful to see the results coming up in the next few months.
Yeah, let's keep on pushing.
Yes, we'll keep on pushing. So we've talked about the work and, you know, this really what's left, a lot of what's left to do to make sure that we are highlighting and advancing justice for Indigenous communities. I want to get deeper into the personal. And I know you've shared in the past about growing up in LA and being an LAUSD student. I myself was an LAUSD student. And I'm just curious to hear about your experience. You know, I think education has such an important place in advancing health equity for communities. And many times our educational systems are not prepared to support us and empower us to, you know, be on the right path. And I just want to hear about your experience in the LAUSD system.
Well, my experience in the LAUSD system was very traumatic because suddenly a 10-year-old from the mountains just shows up in this city, and suddenly, you know, you are with people that don't speak your language, that don't eat your food, that are not part of your culture. And suddenly you're just alone in this process. And they kept on passing. Nobody knew I was Indigenous or I spoke an Indigenous language. They kept on passing me until I couldn't do it anymore and left on 10th grade. You know, and that hasn't changed, right? There's a little bit of change right now with LAUSD. We're in conversations about Indigenous interpretation and including books. So we have a coloring book that Janet and Luis developed from our core team, and they just put the order to get 300 books. We're so excited because kids will be seen, but I wish we had that when I was a kid. There was nothing. I think they talked about the Aztecs and the Mayans, but very briefly, right? And nothing to do with the real cultures, you know? And it was very traumatic. The food was awful, you know, but I do love the coffee cake. Occasionally I'll go to Homeboys and get a coffee cake, but, and that still happens today. And with the pandemic, our kids were were very impacted, and LAUSD was not prepared, or and nobody was prepared to deal with a pandemic. But now our kids are 2 years behind, and it's Black and brown children, you know, that were back to square one. Their testing results are very low, and those are Black and brown children, right? So it's education is key, and when we don't have that at the early age, you fall behind. Like, I read, and I love reading, but I prefer audiobooks because then I could just listen to it once or rewind, as opposed to if I have to read, I have to read a book twice before I fully understand, right? This is as a result of nobody knowing that I spoke another language, that I needed support, you know, instead of pushing me to drop out. I mean, it was hard.
Yeah, it's hard. No, I hear you. You know, I think you know this, but I moved to the U.S. when I was 10. So I was put into the fourth grade, only spoke Spanish. So I was walking around with an English-Spanish dictionary. And I still remember my teacher at the time saying, oh, you won't even make it to high school. Just, you know, just do what you can, but you don't need to look up every word that I say. And, you know, it's hurtful, these comments, and the way, unfortunately, that the system embraces that mentality. Because then I was in rooms and in classrooms where the teacher was reading a magazine instead of teaching. And, you know, there was this, I feel like, a lack of urgency for all of us in that room. And again, we were all Black and brown children sitting in a room where we weren't being taught. And unfortunately, it's the reality for many of our students still. And these are systems and changes that we need to see to ensure that our youth have an amazing future ahead of them.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of work to be done. I don't think at that time, also my neighbor, I know she didn't speak Spanish, but I didn't know what she spoke. And now going back, I'm like, oh, there were Guatemalans. They probably spoke Quiche or Comal, you know. We would just look at each other. We couldn't communicate. And yeah, of course there were Guatemalans. We knew they were from Guatemala, but we didn't know there were indigenous people in Guatemala. And suddenly we realized that they didn't speak Spanish. And now I think about it, yeah, like we're talking about the 80s. It's in the middle of a war. You know, I'm sure there were Quiches, Canjobales, Ishiles that were our neighbors in that building, right? But LAUSD never noticed. And it's until now that people are organizing. The kids are organizing. There's an amazing comité in Miguel Contreras at the Mayan Club, which I'm really excited. Like there's a Mayan Club in this school. So that's going to get LAUSD changing when there's student organizing in their own language within this system, right? So that's exciting. That's exciting.
Oh, I love that. That's so good to hear. And that actually reminds me of the amazing impact that you all at Cielo have across the nation. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, Cielo serves 24 states in this country, and we provide interpretation in hospitals, in school, in courts, mainly in courts. You know, we work in different states, Indiana, Milwaukee, New York, California, 24 states. I can't remember all of them, but we provide this interpretation and we train our interpreters. And that's so important because the fact that you speak Spanish doesn't mean you're going to be able to interpret, you know. There will be words, technical terms that we will know. So and we're very, very adamant about training our interpreters because in Cielo, we believe one word makes a difference. We have the life of our compañeros, of an entire family on the tip of our tongue. One word. One word could mean deportation. It could mean them getting an asylum granted. It could mean the wrong surgery or the right surgery, right? So one word. So for us, it's so important to train. We train our interpreters every week in different topics, legal, medical, labor, social movement. So we're constantly training them because when we get there, we want them to interpret from the human rights lens to work towards ending language violence against indigenous peoples.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And you all have this great campaign right now in LA with the billboards. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, the billboards are very exciting. I was very impressed to see them. I was out of the country, or I don't know if it was out of the country. I was out somewhere when they were dropped. And on one of those days, I was driving in LA, and my son goes, "Look, look, Grandma's watching you." I'm like, "Where's Grandma?" It's like, "Up there." You know, and that's the first time I saw them, and they were so impressive. And as we go around LA, my son looks at them and is like, "Oh, there's another one. There's another one." And he takes a picture, right? And then I look and I go, yeah, they are so impressive. These billboards that, you know, the campaign is run by Janet, the VICD. And the idea behind them is to create awareness of our existence in LA County. So, you know, the billboards are amazing. They say, "I speak Quiche, I speak Mije, I speak Zapotec, I speak Canjobal, I speak Maya." So, I mean, people love them. I go to a community event and they're like, "Oh, we love them." If I go to a Mije community, they're like, "Oh, we love that, you know, we never thought we would see this." Or people that I know, they're like, "Oh, my mom's one of the models." They're like, "Oh my God, Eulogia looks so amazing. It feels so good to see somebody that we know in the community that wears our regalia." So I've gotten a lot of positive comments from the community. They feel seen and heard, right? And also, you know, hopefully LA institutions will take notice of our existence as well.
That's beautiful. Yeah, they're so amazing. Every time I drive by and I see them, I feel so touched and inspired. So thank you for that. Now, so we've talked about your work going nationwide and local to LA. Tell us about this fun photo shoot that you did for Vogue. How did that happen?
Oh, it happened over tamales. Actually, the photographer came to take pictures for Poncho's Tlayudas, and I happened to help come into the setup. And we begin to talk, and she's like, what do you guys need? What do you do? And I explain, and she's like, oh, you know, I do photography. I'm doing this for, I think, I don't know what company she was doing it in. She had come to picture Poncho, my partner, who's a chef, to do pictures of him. And we became friends with the, well, we didn't become friends. We talked, and she's like, oh, like, talk about putting it out to the universe. And she's like, I do photography in New York. And like, what would you like to be seen? I'm like, Vogue, of course. Everybody wants to be seen in Vogue. That was it. Like 2 months later, she's like, you'll be seen in Vogue. I'm like, what? And then she's like, she said, and then a week after, she set up the picture shooting, the shoot. And then we asked my mom, and she's like, no, I don't want to do this. And she finally did it. And ever since then, she's become very friendly with the camera. And we went for the photo shoot, then the interview, and then it happened. It happened over tamales.
That's beautiful. Over tamales, tlayudas, mezcal. I love the joy, yeah, right, that our communities bring.
That it's very like, it wasn't nothing like a PR push. No, no, no. We just met over tamales, over food, over another photo shoot, and there we are.
So maybe we'll go into the TED Talk. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the TED Talk?
The TED Talk is just one of those other things that suddenly happened. I didn't think it was even real. They reached out to me, and I'm like, oh, okay. But it was somebody emailed me like, okay, is this real? Are you real? And I think a lot of things that has happened to me in life is that, like the TED Talk, the Vogue, the Target, the AT&T, it was just people like DMing me. I'm like, is this even real? You know, and that's how the TED Talk happened. They emailed me.
It's because you're so amazing.
Oh, thank you. So I said, sure. Once I found out it was real, I went to like the public speaking training, and then there's a TED Talk. Same thing with Target commercial, right? Like somebody kept on texting me on my Instagram. I'm like, is this even real? And yeah, it was real. Same thing with AT&T. I'm like, okay. So it just happened.
I love that.
I have no agent. I don't have a PR company. Cielo doesn't either. So it's just the universe.
I love that. And well deserved. And I love the way you're representing the community and just killing it. And then maybe just to wrap up our conversation, this $1 million question, how do we finally achieve health equity for our communities? What's left to do?
I think we as people, organizations, we have a lot already on our plates. And I believe like it has to be also the elected officials, right? They have to recognize the contribution of migrants to this country and recognize indigenous people of this land, contributions of our African American relatives, and also the Latinos, right, that and indigenous people that have contributed to this country. We contributed so much with this healthcare. You know, we're already making this state great with our multilingual veins. What are you going to do as an elected official for us to have healthcare? That's a question for them. What are they going to do? More than a question for us. We're already doing a lot. We're putting our lives out there for this state every day. But what are they going to do? How are we going to hold them accountable?
That's beautifully put. And that's what we can leave our listeners with today. What are you going to do personally to address health inequities for our Indigenous communities, our Latina subgroup communities? Love that. Well, thank you so much, Odilia. I really appreciate your time in joining us. I really appreciate our partnership. I admire you very much, and I'm so glad that we're in the work together.
Likewise, cuídate, and thank you for having me. And we'll see each other in our next calls, next meetings, next visit to the Capitol.
Yes, perfect. Over to Tlayudas.
Over to you, yes.
Te me cuidas.
All right. Cuídate. Adiós.
Bye. Have a great weekend.